Tonight we have Jordan Steele, and I'm sure the topic that he chose got a lot of attention. Cows suck. I'm not going to do much of an introduction. Jordan is from Ranching for Profit and graciously agreed to come on tonight and explain what he means and try to help us navigate this enterprise. I will just have Jordan go ahead and start.
Okay, thanks Holly for introducing me and thanks for having me, everyone. Dallas is in Spain at the moment, and this is actually his birthday, so we'll have to give him grief when he gets back. But yeah, we're just going to go with, we're going to work through some gross margins and look at some overheads for just a typical cow-calf deal. That seems to be our most common ranch. Like Holly said, I'm with Ranch Management Consultants. We do the Ranching for Profit School. I see a lot of alumni's names on here. So if you have any questions about that, don't be afraid to ask, and we'll just get started here. So I'm going to minimize this stuff here. So here's our cows suck. We're just going to get started with this. When Holly and I talked about doing this, we talked about me not really talking too much, and we'll just go through these slides and get it opened up for discussion after that. But when I was putting this PowerPoint together, I felt like with the current weather we're having right now in our northern states, this might be the most appropriate type of cow we're going to do, something the Highlanders here with a lot of hair anyways. So seems to be cold in most places. So first, let's just get started with just a regular 100 cow herd. And what we're going to do is we're going to start with 100 cows, and then we're going to go through a production year, and then we're going to end with 100 cows. So I got my list here of what we're going to do. And so if I can just get someone to speak up with what they think a number would be out of 100, it can be a percent or it can be a hard and fast number. And then we'll get our sales and our purchases here. How many are going to die in a year? Cows we're talking about.
This is Chris. I'll say 5, but don't make me call on you. Chris, this is Chris Mayhus, and I will call on people.
Should we go with 2? So that leaves us 98 in the herd. They're not all going to wean a calf. They're either going to slough a calf or the calf's going to die at birth or sometime during the summer. So how many are not going to bring a calf in during the fall if we're in just a regular spring calving herd? The beauty of this is every number's wrong.
5.
So that takes us down to 93. And I got an asterisk here because we're going to come back to this. We'll need this when we get our calf sales, because these died and these didn't wean a calf. So we're going to have 93 calves to sell. How many are going to wean a calf but not breed back? So we're going to get rid of them because they're open.
4.
8.
4. I heard a 4 and an 8. So we'll shoot the difference there. So that takes us down to 87. And then we're going to cull some others because they are either old, they're lame, they have a bad bag, or they're mean or something like that. We just don't want to keep them. How many else are we going to get rid of?
That'd be another 8 head.
Another 8?
Yeah.
So that takes us down. So that takes us down to 79. So if we add these up, 2 and 5 is 7, and 6 is 13, and 8 is 21. So we have to buy 21, and then that gets us up to our 100 head again at the end of the production year. Does that make sense? This little mind map here I did in the grid. And so I got 2 numbers I got to remember here. We're going to sell 93 calves, and these cows died, so we can't sell them, but we have 5, 11, 19 cull cows. So after we got our herd performance, then we can go into what we call it gross product in our RFP economic model. And since we began and ended with 100 cows, our gross product is going to be sales minus purchases. So we sold 93 calves at, how big did we sell them at? This is where I really need you guys for your Montana markets.
When are you calving?
Whenever you want. April?
So 600 pound calves.
And what are they worth right now? Sell them off the cow.
I just looked at the Billings livestock and heifers were going, I was doing 550s, but they were going for $1.80, and steers were going for $2.05.
Let's go 550 at $1.90 then. 93 times 550 times 1.9. So we have 97,000 in calf sales. And then those cull cow sales, we had 19 of them. And what's a cull cow worth in Billings?
They were 72 cents a pound.
Does it have weights on them?
It was like between like about 15, I'd say average.
15 average, okay. And 70 cents a pound?
72, yeah, 70 is close enough.
Okay. We had about 20,000 in cull cow sales, 19,950. And so then the cow purchases, we had to buy 21 of them to replace the ones we sold and the two that died. So what are replacement cows? Did Billings have any sales there?
That I didn't look.
What's a bred cow worth right now?
1900.
First instinct. 1500?
19 for young ones.
I think I heard 1800. Is that right?
That'll work.
Okay. So 21 times 1800 is 37,800. And I'm going to put that one in parentheses because we had to buy those. The other two are sales for us. So if we take the calf sales and the cull cow sales, that's 117,000 minus the cows that we had to buy is 79,335. So that's our gross product. That's the total value that our cow herd has generated this year between sales and purchases because our inventory is still the same. And so we're working on 100 cows. So gross product per cow is $793. So one big thing to notice here is that we sold our calves at $1,045 per head, but our gross product per cow is under $800. So that's, we can come back to that in discussion, but that's something important to point out here. So for now, let's keep moving into this gross margin scenario. The direct costs at RFP, what we teach is that the direct costs are only what change per unit of production. So these are going to be the main ones are opportunity interest, feed, and health. And so the opportunity interest, we're going to charge these cows either an interest charge for the money we tied up. And also, if we get the option to expand the cow herd, we've already budgeted in there an interest charge so we can go borrow the money and expand our cow herd that way. So usually what we do is a conservative, consistent amount for the beginning inventory value. And that's what we're going to assume is the money tied up in there. And so if we sold some cows at that $800, $900 mark and for the cull cows, but we had to buy $1,800 cows, this one, let's just assume that we can get all the cows sold for $1,500 a head. And so we're going to charge you $150 in interest on those cows. And that one's the only one I'm going to give you. So then the feed fed, let's see how many months are we going to have to feed the cows in a normal winter? And look at this winter right now too, because I know you guys are cold and snowy at the moment.
Three
months?
Yeah.
So if we're going to feed them 30 pounds a day at 90 days, that's 2,700 pounds. So that's a ton and a half. And what does hay cost for you guys there? I know what it is for me.
Better call it at least 2.25.
2.25? I'd say 250. So I'm right in line with you there. So we fed, I'm going to take this out because we said 1.5 ton was 90 days, 30 pounds per day. So that's 1.5 ton. Equals 225 is $338. Okay, and then next would be the health. So these are going to be your preg checking, your branding shots, your weaning shots, and then any other preventative care or vet bills that we would need to associate with the cows. We get answers anywhere from $20 to $100 on this.
If you're including breeding, you're probably close to $50.
Okay. That's so the bulls would be included in the gross product, so we don't have to worry about that. But if you're doing any other AI or stuff like that, we can include those. What about 40? And then Another one that we commonly see too is if you take it to sale barn or superior commissions or something like that, and they got to get on a truck to go somewhere, we usually put, I can put like 10, 20 bucks in there for commissions and then a semi ride to wherever they're going. So we'll just call that 20. Up here too, I almost forgot. We could include some salt and mineral up there, but we don't really need to. We're still getting the point across here. So this is per cow that we all did this on. We're not going to worry about that one. So if we add up these direct costs, it is $548. And we're still working on that 100 cow herd. So then the next step we got to take is our gross product minus the gross product minus direct costs is going to be our gross margin. And that's what we're going to look at. So gross product was this $79,335, and the direct costs were $548 or $54,800. So if we subtract those two, 24,535. We're going to knock that down to gross margin per cow. So that's $245. So why we want to know the gross margin is that's our economic efficiency of this enterprise. We could then take this down to comparing it to yearlings or sheep or something like that with some standard weight units. This gross margin that we've come up with is not real great, because then what we haven't included is if we move into our overheads, which are the last part of our economics. So remember, land and labor are overheads. They do not change per unit of cow. We usually rent the ranch on just a total dollar amount, or we have forest allotments or something like that. And then labor, if you go from 99 cows to 100 cows, you don't need another unit of labor. And machinery and equipment, stuff like that, you still just have for the whole cow herd. So then what we can do is, and then now where I want to go into some discussion is on this $245, do we have enough to pay for some rented land and some cows? How many acres? If we were to, we fed for 3 months, right? So we have 9 months to graze. How many acres does it take to run a cow in eastern Montana, central Montana? Are you guys in 40 acre country?
As low as 25 and as high as 60.
25 to 60? Okay, I can shoot in the middle. So that'd be, yeah, we'll call it 40 acres. And I have no idea what cash rents are. Would they be 10 bucks an acre? That makes for easy math. Or is that too high or too low?
7.5 an acre.
7.5?
Of course, that's eastern Montana.
My opinion is that it might be a little, you're going to average BLM, Forest Service, state land, and maybe even like a private lease. 10 would be a little low for me.
10 would be low.
I think 15 would be closer average if you consider private leases being up around 25 bucks a month per head, but or more.
Okay, so you're looking more at a dollar per day or something like that. Okay. I appreciate that input because I've been living in Kansas for the last 7 years, so I know what all the rents are there, but I'm not familiar with our Rocky Mountain states again yet. So 40 times 15 times 100 cows is 60,000. And then the labor. So what we usually charge for labor is you have to pay to replace yourself. So the work that you're doing, and that includes all of the administrative and the decision-making too, plus moving the cows, fixing the fence. I'm just going to put 50,000 in there to find a good hired hand. And that's the whole package: salary, health insurance, beef, a house, whatever else needs to be included in there. And so for machinery and equipment, we need a horse or a horse trailer, a truck, a four-wheeler, and maybe some horses and dogs in there. We don't even really need to put a total value in there, but we're going to need something to do there, because this hired hand that we put here isn't going to walk around everywhere. So that's depreciation, fuel, repairs and maintenance, etc. Because what we have here is we have $110,000 worth of just land and labor. And we only had $24,000 worth of gross margin from our cows. So how many cows do we need is my first question. We need four times as many cows, because we had $25,000 of gross margin and 100 $1,000 worth of overheads. And so the economics of these cow herds, what we're going to run into then is this, how are these overheads going to change as our cow herd changes? And so this is honestly where we could open it up for discussion, Holly. I'm happy to go any which way the crowd wants to now. And if anyone has any questions to either, yeah, unmute and speak up, or you can put it in the chat too. I should be able to see that.
I think our labor's too high. We probably
think your labor's too high?
Yeah. We wouldn't be paying anyone labor for with 100 cows.
Someone still needs to get paid to do the work though, even if you're doing it.
I understand that, but I work cheaper.
What do you want me to put in there?
Bill Milton, what should he put in there?
I think the point comes that this place needs some more cows without actually changing the labor or the maintenance, or at least not very much. That somehow you got to increase your numbers without changing your overhead.
Right. Yep. Yep.
That's why we all go out and lease land. But then we got to, we're still paying the same, whether we're paying our opportunity cost for our grass or paying someone else, if they're comparable, that shouldn't change much.
That's exactly right. And that's why we split it up into the gross margins and the overheads, because we know what our cows are producing on each cow. So as we increase numbers of cows, those are going to contribute to the overheads. And this question comes up a lot about what to use for the opportunity interest and the labor and the opportunity land rent. And then even on this machinery and equipment, even if it's paid off, we want you to charge those in there, because when you're doing your projections, if everything included and the neighbor's place comes up for lease, then you've already built in the interest, so you can go borrow the money to buy the cows, and you've included the land rent in there, so we know we can cover that, and you can go hire someone to go run the cows. So there's nothing stopping you from expanding tomorrow on those, on that ranch. That's why it's so important to put all these extra costs in there.
Have you, or has anybody else ever heard of a metric for full-time employees per 100 head or some ratio? Because you add more cows and eventually labor's going to go up. There's a lot of work brandings and vaccinations and everything else. Have you ever heard of a metric or used a metric for that?
Yeah. Like you said, once you keep increasing cow numbers, and like you said, that labor is going to change eventually. What we like to say is the overheads will usually jump at stair step levels. So you get to so many cows and then you have to hire the next full-time guy, or the next ranch increases those charges. We have a sister company called RCS, and they've got a really good benchmark in Australia. And a lot of times we're looking at about $400,000 worth of gross product per full-time employee. And also when I worked at Kansas Farm Management Association for the last 7 years too. So pretty much any of the K-State Ag Econ reports you're looking at, I was part of the program that was put together with the local farmers. And I actually pushed more on the farmers, depending on cows and farmland. I know there's more farmland in Montana than I realized. It could be upwards of 800,000 to 1 million per full-time employee. And that's on gross product. So that's dollars per acre revenue, and then this gross product that we generated here of gross product per cow.
Gotcha. Okay.
And I'm also gonna steal a quote from Burke Teichert here too, but a common thing you hear him get repeated on is 500 cows is a part-time job. We came up with gross product per cow here of 793. If we take that times 500, there's your 400,000 all.
So Jordan, on this, like 500 cows is a part-time job.
Yep.
I've been in my years going to ranching for profit schools, I've seen that. Yeah, one guy should be able to handle 1,000 cows or whatever. And you just rarely see a situation where there isn't a bunch of other people. There's somewhat, whether it's, there's just other people engaged that allow that one person to take care of those cows. That there's someone else in the office, there's someone else fixing things. But maybe I could be wrong here. At least I haven't been around an operation, too many operations that pull that off successfully. It seems yep. like you have to have a really clean piece of grass in a pretty accommodating environment. And the other thing is, I've never been in a place where something doesn't happen to that person where he can't be present. I haven't met too many people who, 365 days are getting the job done. But
right,
these are just nuances. I know where you're going with this, but in the real world, there's just other people involved, but you maybe don't account for them.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's got to be help in there. I would agree with that, too. Yeah. Anyone else? Any other comments on that? I guess on my side, I put how many cows to provide for a family. That depends on our family living and also the profitability of the business. Where is there room for improvement? The original title of this slide this evening was Cows Suck and What to Do About It. So there's multiple ways we can work on improving this here. And it starts on every slide. So here on herd performance, we can do our best to keep these numbers to a minimum. Or if these cows don't fit our operation, then we can just do a better job on how we sell them. So maybe we want to market them instead of writing them down to the bottom of cull cow value. Maybe we can sell them as bred cows or late bred cows or something like that. We can't do much about the market, but we can change our marketing. So what class of animal are we selling? What timing of the year are we selling them? And then so that would increase gross product. But we want to remember we're looking at gross margin. So we want to increase gross product without increasing direct costs. Because another way we can improve is on these direct costs. Like I said, I'm going to make you charge the interest because I want you to have that factored in. However, what can we do about this feed fed? Can we cheapen up the purchase price? Can we only feed them 60 days? And once again, we can't just cut feed. We know how well that's going to work. If we cut feed out, our gross product is going to get suffered too much. So that's why we focus on the gross margin. It's the relationship of gross product and direct costs. We can't steal another quote here, but you can't starve profit into the business. And then as far as gross margin, then once we know this, then we're just going to have to get numbers. So we can increase gross product, we can manage direct costs, and we want to optimize this gross margin per cow and get it up to size. So if we take, for example, if we added $100 per market, per animal that we marketed, that'd get us up to $345. And if we cut $100 worth of direct costs out, whether feed was cheaper or we got to better grazing, then we're looking at a gross margin per cow of $445. Now we would only have to double our cow herd to let us meet that land and labor charge. Does that make sense to everyone, or did I go too fast through those slides? I'm not sure how well it's relaying onto your guys' slides to go through here.
That makes sense.
That's good. I like to hear that. So we talked about how many cows. We talked about room for improvement, and that's financial improvement. And then this last one that I thought of too today is sometimes we're not even asking the right question during this 20 below weather and the wind and the snow. Is anyone questioning whether or not we should just have cows all year round? These blizzards are good times to have these conversations.
So in conjunction with your question, how does an operation double their cow herd with the resources they have been working with historically? You don't.
Sorry, you kind of cut out right there. What was that?
How do you double the size of your cow herd under the best circumstances, given the resources you've been working with historically?
The main way we see people increase their cow herds is getting better at grazing. And getting better at grazing in two ways. The first being setting their system up to graze year round. So we change it from feed fed to feed grazed all year round, because that not only gets rid of the feed purchases, but it gets rid of the tractor and all the time and labor to take care of it. And then some major improvements in grazing management and soil health to get our ranch to have more carrying capacity. Those are the two biggest areas I see improvement on feed fed and grazing. That way you can increase your cow numbers without necessarily increasing your land base or your labor associated with it.
And are you finding that works consistently.
I would say so. I have heard plenty of learning curves and learning bumps, that's for sure, on people doing it the first couple of years. But eventually, if they stick with it, they get it figured out. I know, like I said, I was in Kansas for a while and everyone thought winters were bad there. And I'm in Wheatland now and the wind blows all the time here. And you guys are farther north than I am now. So I know people in Canada that do it year round too. So it can be done.
Thank you.
You bet.
Jordan, to this right question, I've often wondered why people think their historic place or the ranch they end up owning is somehow balanced enough to generate a consistent profit. Why do we assume that the boundary that we own is sufficient to run a profitable enterprise? More times than not, at least my experience is by putting a boundary around where our business needs to operate becomes a problem. Some places, based on changing circumstances, just don't have the capacity, no matter how cool your grazing is. And I'm not saying you can't make improvements, but sometimes just trying to partner with other people on other pieces of ground is a fairly economical way to spread risk and create capacity.
Yeah. And I totally agree with you there, because another note I had too was we can always talk about seasonal enterprises like yearlings or custom graze something, but I also have, should you own the animals? And you talked about partnering. So just because you own the cows doesn't mean you have to care for them. So if you guys are snowed up in Montana, you can send them out somewhere or just put cows out on shares too. That's a way of expanding without you physically doing the work.
Jordan, there's a question in the chat.
Oh.
If you want to read it.
So a question in the chat. Given these numbers, why do so many people run cow-calf operations? I think there's two reasons here. One is I think it's the easiest. Most people can care for cows and calves. Lots of people are somewhat intimidated by yearlings as far as fence and handling them and wrecks and stuff like that. And the old rule, the second thought is the old rule is just that's just what we've always done. If there's a positive gross margin, remember, if the ranch is owned and we're not paying ourselves a full market value to work, we can cash flow the ranch without showing a true economic profit. And if you can pay the bills on that, on those cows and calves, then go on. No one's here to tell you it's wrong. But lately with markets, they've just been having some poor margins. And we talk about generations worked for our older generations. They could run cows and they could make lots of money on it. Markets were, we're looking at the relative market between cows and calves and land and machinery and labor. And right now, those, if we were to look at those similar ratios, they are different. And I think it's important too to remember that our kids are going to be having these same conversations. It worked for them, but it's not going to work for us. So I hope that answered it. I rambled on there a little bit.
Jordan, in the ranching for profit world, we have some groups up here in central Montana that recognize that, and it has been for some time, that purchasing land is really not an economic way to get into managing a livestock herd. It's just not realistic anymore. But how does that change in your guys' world that land is no longer something people can buy if they think they're going to buy it to run cattle? Is that just becoming an accepted kind of norm for this day and age, that land is different, cattle are different? Connect land and cattle is some kind of synergistic relationship. It's in terms of the value of what land can bring in our economy for something other than cattle. Yep. Land is no longer, people don't invest in land to run cattle.
I think it has been somewhat accepted now that you frame it that way. What we teach at the school is we're going into the livestock business. This is a different deal than the land investment. Now, as far as, like you said, we're not going to go buy land to put cows on it. Cows aren't going to pay for the value. They're not going to pay the mortgage payment. What we can do with that land, though, is different, because there's, we can look at other enterprises, hunting, scenery, whatever else. You guys are going to be in a lot different market than I am here in Wheatland, where you guys are at in Montana. As far as cash flow, we have to look at what can the business afford, the livestock business. I always look at, when people ask me this, I always ask them too, what phase is their business in? So phase one, phase two, phase three. If I'm a phase one business and I'm starting from scratch, it is almost business suicide to go buy land. Because the, like you said, the rent is, the mortgage payment might be 4 or 5 times greater than market value rent in that area. However, I do agree with, and will build wealth over time. So as long as we can afford those cash payments, we can buy a small place here, even if it's just a quarter or a section, and get started there and get through those first sets of payments. And then after 10 years, we can capture that land appreciation, get another piece bought, and then continue to roll our profits into land. So I understand the importance of the business cash flow not to buy land, but I also see the great value of wealth accumulation in land also. The question sometimes we get from people in scenic areas, I can't remember who I talked to, it might have been Chris in Big Timber. You could sell a small place in Big Timber and go buy a really big place somewhere else that could run 3 or 4 times as many cows. So the question is, do you want to buy land, or are you attached to the land you're already on too?
I think what I'm hearing is that you have this enterprise called land that you can appreciate value over time. It has nothing to do with cattle.
They're a small portion of what you can do with it.
I'm talking too much. I'd love to hear other people say something, but to me, it seems like for any young family to get in the business today, they have to understand what you just explained here with gross margin and can somehow pencil out a gross margin that works at the front end. And then they're going to have to go find some partner to get some grass and to convince them that if they're going to add some value for that landowner. But, and I think that's an appropriate and workable way for young people to potentially. I'm an older guy, and if my daughter who's coming back doesn't want to run the business, we'll probably try and find a young family who could make the grass work with an appropriate gross margin and take care of the ground and do all these cool things.
Yep.
So I think there's an opportunity there, but the opportunity for these young people is that there's going to be some people out there who own land that are going to create that opportunity.
Yep. And you said it already, but that's where I was going with the opportunities there if you look for it. Like you said, if there's, you can installment sale, buy it on an installment contract from an older couple if they don't want the land anymore and they can sell it. That would help you, your cash flow and their tax bill. You can take their cows in on shares and help them. Like you said, there's lots of transfer ideas that we've seen some pretty creative routes with younger people taking over for some retired people that don't want to sell everything. And that's where it's also nice too, to have that. If that livestock business is separated from the land investment, then, you know, the younger generation can take over the livestock business while still renting the land from the older couple, or examples like that too.
So Jordan, I was going to ask, can you hear me okay?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. With going through a few years of pretty severe drought here, a lot of people have destocked. And so, you know, the title of your talk here, Cows Suck, I think you've established that and we all believe you. So as people, let's hope that we have some good years coming up. It seems like you've given us a small set of variables here that we can consider if we decide to go out and purchase cows and go with pairs again, or we can weigh that against running some more yearlings or doing some different things, maybe custom grazing or renting out some of that land, if that seems like an option. So maybe going back to the slides, can you just run through those and give us an example of how we can compare numbers, set up projections for running cows versus yearlings versus a custom graze versus something else?
Sure. What I would look at here is on this gross product line, the custom graze, I'll really have to rely on you guys too. Because if we were to custom graze, I kind of know what rates are here, but gross product for custom graze is just going to be days times dollars per Jordan. Head.
Hey, Jordan.
Yeah.
Can you share your screen again?
Oh, sorry. I was typing on my PowerPoint, but I never shared it. That's pretty helpful, isn't it?
Thank you.
Yep. There we go. Does anyone have a rate that people charge for custom grays? Do we have any custom grazers out there?
Russ, are you still on?
Yes, I am. For a yearling, and it all depends on your incoming weight, I'd say anywhere from $23, $25 would be a number per head per month.
Per month. And then how many is that for a 6 month grazing period?
It all depends. Yeah, you could use that, but no, typically, yeah, it could be 4 to 6 months, but yeah, it just depends on your operation.
Okay. I think that would be comparable to me in southeastern Wyoming here. So for easy math, $25 per, and then we'll call it 4 months. And so that's, you said 4 to 6, so we'll go 5 months. So that's $125. That's our gross product. However, the important thing to remember now on the nice thing about custom grays is, someone tell me what our direct costs are on a custom grays.
Zero.
Zero. Perfect. So what's our gross margin?
125.
Yep. So then, now we all know, like you said, Russ, I think you said it depends on your end weight, but would it be pretty safe to say we can run 2 yearlings to this one cow?
That would be very safe, yes. As long as your incoming weight, yeah, I get going on my little side deal here. You can't have a yearling defined as an 850-pounder. Let's assume a 650-pound incoming weight. So, yes.
Okay, I like that. So then we can just take that 125 and multiply it by 2. So these gross margins would be very comparable of custom grazing the yearlings or buying the cow. Now, the biggest then comes in our risk factor. So how much money did we have to borrow? How much risk are we taking in the market? With custom grazing, that's on the owner. And so we can even set them up to keep switching back and forth between economics and finance, but you don't have to borrow the money, and we can ask that custom grazer to pay us once a month. So now every month that they're in here, we get a check for whatever it would be, $10,000 or $20,000. So that's a good option. I always think custom grazing is the first route for us to pick as an option, because there's always people that own cattle that are looking for grass, and they will pay you to take care of them. And if you can keep them alive and keep them healthy and ship them all back out, you'll find yourself a good partnership there. So I always feel like custom graze is a good way to start. And then let's look at owning the cattle. If we can beat our gross margins owning the cattle, then let's look at owning them. What's on that?
Just to follow up, Jordan. So that's a pretty simple way to look at things. And I think that'll work for most people. Does Ranching for Profit have projections, spreadsheets that allow you to just plug and play?
We do have a spreadsheet that is, I wouldn't say plug and play, but it does. I'm going to open this up so I can see you guys again. It does look at the whole operation, so we can compare standard animal units and stuff like that. Sometimes it's hard to get into spreadsheets, though, just because we fight stupid formulas and stuff like that as much as anything. But there are some spreadsheets available, yeah.
On your previous example with the custom graze, that was only for 5 months, and our cows, we were grazing them for 9 months. So don't we have to also adjust for time? That seems to me like custom grazing should be worth almost twice what the cows were if you adjusted for time.
Yeah, I would agree with that, because like you said, two to one for the cow weights, but then almost another 2 to 1 for the time grazing. That's what you were asking?
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that would,
standardize our numbers a little better.
Yeah.
I said, so it seems like we need to standardize everything for equal comparison.
Absolutely. So what you were saying here, that's for the weight. And then so we could multiply it again there. So that would double it. So our custom graze is even better. That'd probably be more like 450. Is that what you were saying there?
Yeah.
Yep. I would totally agree with that. I got another chat here, and Bill, I don't know if you saw this or not, but Jim said, thank you for your input. And then Jim also asked, why isn't the value of grass a direct cost? And so we get this question a lot too. We do feed fed as a direct cost because we can associate that per unit of production. So we have one cow, we feed her a bale. We typically don't rent grass per head. We rent it for the ranch, or we pay for the forest allotment. So all land and labor is default to overheads. And since we get it by the lump sum, that's why we call that an overhead. Does that make sense? If not, tell me that, Jim.
Yeah, I would say the confusion is just that typically direct expenses are unit-based. So since it does go up with the number of head, that would be the reason you'd think of it as a direct expense. But
yep. Rule of thumb, the easiest rule of thumb that we say is if you take the feed to the cow, that is a direct cost. But if you take the cow to the feed, then that's going to be an overhead.
I've been to the school and I get the distinction there. To be perfectly honest, I was hoping to get an explanation for another person on the call.
Okay. I hope I answered it for them.
Can I comment on that really quick?
Yes.
I think it's really great to hear your perspective and others too. On the grass charge, I was just thinking too that if a person is running yearlings and buying and selling yearlings and potentially paying leases on a per head basis, it seems like it would be pretty important to factor that grass cost into your break-evens so you knew what you could buy those calves for and turn around and sell them. And so I was just thinking there are definitely times when there is potentially a lease per head on a per head basis for summer and yearlings or something like that. So just wanted to comment on that.
And I agree with that too, Andrew. One of the big questions that we get too is corn stalk leases. You can send them out to corn stalks, and that's some sort of dollar figure per head per day. That there's always a gray area there. But I do agree. If you're looking at your sell by margins, we definitely need to factor in some sort of land charge in there and feed cost to say, should we even buy this animal? But if we look back and we want to look at our RFP benchmarks, then that's when we're going to split out that feed fed versus the feed grazed into the direct costs and the overheads. I see one more chat in here. Yeah, and that's a good point. We typically lease stake our forest as an AUM. So is it a unit cost? I'm going to say no, it's still an overhead because it's land. We're trying to get that distinction between the feeding and the grazing. And that's part of it too, that the forest AUMs, if we want to compare to other people's gross margins per cow or per standard animal unit, that's when we have to make sure we split out that feed fed versus feed grazed. If we're looking at your business only, we can play with those rules a little bit, but if we want to compare apples to apples with everyone else, that's when we have to get strict with those rules.
Jordan, I don't know if this is the appropriate discussion to do this. I know Ranching for Profit has evolved their benchmarks over time, and they're really an important part of your business as you, all the people who go to the school and are shooting for targets. Is it very difficult to share what you guys use for benchmarks for operations? You probably don't have that.
I don't have it in front of me, and I wish I did, but I really don't have a great answer for that right now. I do know if you talk to me here probably next fall, that is on Dallas's and I's to-do list, is to update those and get some more recent numbers. Did I beat around the bush on that question?
Well, you're just being easy your mind. You still have that slide, but I remember off and on talking to Dave Pratt about just, so what are these measurable benchmarks that somehow you could really, you really do have good data from your alumni that show that they're meeting that? Because on this side, this would be a holler out to you, Holly, for how we do this. We have these sessions, and I keep thinking, when are we going to have a session where we're all willing to share our gross margin and actually congratulate the person who has the best gross margin and then ask them, show us how you got a great gross margin versus being embarrassed to show that our gross margin sucks. This stuff is great. It's when I start seeing everyone around me being honest about their gross margin that we could actually self-educate or self-support and improve, but we don't take it to that level very often. We don't like to.
Yeah.
I mean, that, That would be a good question. The most important question is, why don't people like to share their numbers if they think
yep.
that might improve their business? So with that, I'll just shut up.
That's it. With the joke at the school is always, when we ask people what a good cow is, we can be colors, breeds, this, that. But to us, a good cow is one with a good gross margin. And I can't remember what school it was, but we were joking that when we doctor yearlings in the pasture, you can either write the date that you doctored on them, or sometimes we'll be sarcastic and write how many loops it took us to rope them. And the next comment was, we should write, if everyone wrote their gross margin on the side of their cow, then that would remind them how good they are in chalk there. So
maybe adding to that a little bit, I was curious, speaking of gross margins for cow-calf enterprise, in all the different producers and areas that you've been in, can you name a couple of the characteristics of those operations that are doing it really well with cow-calf?
Yeah, so the biggest deal is, and Dallas just profit tips, I can't remember if it was the last one that went out or two ago, but he talked about his number he pinpointed was 350. So if we don't have the $350 gross margin, that's cause for concern. So he wants it to be 350 and even up above 400. And as you can see, we came up with like a $240 gross margin tonight. The biggest deal is feed fed. So increasing their grazing days, not just, we can't calve in March, not feed our cows. We know how that's going to end up. So increasing those grazing days, but setting those cows up to calve with less assistance. And then on the marketing side, we're seeing a lot of people really pushing those cow sales, heifer development, and not necessarily heifer development, but that cow value curve to increase some sales there. To me, those would be the biggest ones of gross margin, would be the gross product, and what sales, what class of animal are we marketing, and then getting the feed fed out of there.
Thank you.
You bet.
I don't know if you saw the chat, Bill, but Matt Dawson.
I was typing in is that maybe Holly can set up a session where we can go over, get two or three people to commit to share their gross margins. And that would be kind of fun. And it would probably be stressed, but Matt might just take the lead and show us how to do that.
Yeah, we could definitely set that up because I'm sure we'd be there because we're toying between bred heifers, yearlings. We're still up in the air. So it would be nice to get in a group and be able to bounce ideas back and numbers. And
no, we're redoing ours. And that's another question for you, Jordan. It's like, you almost have to do a gross margin. And I have to admit, we've been a little bit sloppy of late, but it seems appropriate that you would do a gross margin every year because it changes every year.
Yes, absolutely. And even a couple times a year, because the nice thing about doing the gross margins and the overheads is once you do it a couple times, it's just like muscle memory. It's pretty easy. And once the nice thing about putting the land and the labor down below in the overheads, we know what we need to keep the lights on in the business. So if it takes 400,000, 500,000, it's just, that's what we need to generate in gross margin to make this business go round. What enterprise will give us the gross margins per unit that we can run at scale to meet those overheads? And if we just work backwards, that's what's nice about that. And I know the market fell out of bed this year, but not enough people look at sheep as another enterprise too. You know, there's a whole slew of learning curves with them too, but man, there's a lot of people that made a lot of money on sheep over the last few years too. You're on mute, Bill.
They made an unusual pile last fall, but it's a total wreck this fall.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jordan, there's another question in the chat. If you want
to... It might be best to do it over drinks, that question, or the next comment.
But that's a given. The next one.
It's a given. Yeah, as we are starting out, is there a better livestock to start with than cows? I would say yes. And there's a disclaimer here that you have to operate an operation with animals that you can take care of. Sheep and yearlings are going to have a much better turnover than cows. So if you don't have cash available, you're going to have to borrow money to buy cows. They're going to be a year out before they have to calf. You're going to have this and that. And with those custom graze yearlings, we could run 2-to-1. We could turn them over. If you're comfortable buying and selling, you could turn them every 90 days or so and get a couple turns in on a year. And that's going to give you better turnover for cash flow, and you can increase your size there. Once again, I can't remember who I'm stealing this from, but they said the size of the animal does reflect the turnover. So sheep are going to have a higher turnover, and then small yearlings, and then big yearlings, and then cows are actually the lowest turnover. If I'm reading that question right, if it's a startup business, I'm going to really push cash flow in that operation. I was in Texas last week at our Ranching for Profit school, and there were several people down there running hundreds and hundreds of goats. And so if that's an option too, I don't know a thing about goats, but I know some people make money on them.
I wonder if in this discussion that we aren't falling into a little bit of a cookie cutter for each of these class of cattle, because one of the things that you can do to kill a cow operation as far as your margins is spend too much money up front on cows. But the same can be said for yearlings. For somebody who's cows, it might be possible to just slip into some short-term cows for a while and start. Then you have an opportunity to maybe raise some heifers. There's a lot of ways to look at that. Going clear back to the very beginning of your worksheet, your upfront investment in your cows. Right now it looks tough because interest rates are hard, but that applies to yearlings as well. And on the yearling side, you can set yourself up for a wreck by going after high-end calves. And in the same sentence though, you can have a wreck by buying cheap calves too.
Yes, absolutely. You got to keep them alive and you got to keep them healthy. I would totally agree with that.
So anyhow, in that same turnover mindset, short-term cows may be a possible, because those cows, the plus one cows that you buy as short-terms and you get an extra year out of, those are the best cows, but chances are you may not even breed those cows. You might just turn them over.
Yep. If I'm hearing you, an example would be, buy a late bred old cow and run her for 6 months and wean the calf and sell both of them. Would that be an example?
Yeah. Anyhow, you know that you have to have some sort of a template to try and make a point with, but
yep.
I think to write the cow calf deal totally off maybe isn't.
Yeah. No, that wasn't the point. Because if we go back to that, now that you said that, let's go back to this here. So our calf, I forgot to share my screen again. So this here, like you said, we sold our calves at $550 at $1.90 was a little over $1,000 a head. We sold cows at $1,500. So we sold our cull cows at $1,050, and then we bought our new cows back at $1,800. So you're saying let's buy cheaper cows, not necessarily bad cows, but better valued cows, and we can sell them before they fall off this depreciation. Not tax, just I'm talking about cow values here. But so we're gonna decrease our purchase price and increase our sale price. And so what we get is we're gonna take the cow depreciation out of it. And in fact, we might even have an increasing value in our cow herd by capturing those sales there.
Yeah, I would agree, because the depreciation is the bubble in the whole deal.
Yep. Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up. I forgot to go there. I said we'd come back to that slide and I never did. So
I guess this be a question for folks and you, Jordan. I see people raising livestock that can be on two different paths. There's the sell by, just what can you bring on, use that grass, turn it over quick, and just keep moving it through that commodity market. Then there's a case to be made for people who are trying to raise livestock with a value and value factor in terms of marketing. We're part of a beef co-op in which you just can't buy and sell and have that consistent placing of cattle. And over time, they usually produce higher value. In a year like this, it's become more challenging. But and people who are doing selling grass-fed animals or genetics, it's really trying. That is a more complicated path. But if you really are wanting to sell a beef product that has high quality for a particular targeted customer, the path of just buying and selling and getting whatever makes the most sense and has the best gross margin at a certain point in time doesn't necessarily work over the long term if you're trying to create that market. And I'm not putting a value in one or the other. I've done both, maybe more toward the value deal, but and there's challenges on both ends here. I'm just saying that as a beef producer, it's cool to think that you can produce a product that you know what it looks like and what it tastes like and who's buying it and who's appreciating it when it's actually processed. So that's just everybody out here. There's some people out here who are raising those kind of things. Let's see. Brian here with their grass-fed. I don't know if Brian wants to talk or not, but they've worked pretty hard on a grass-fed market.
Yeah. No, I would love to hear from everyone else too, because that's, like you said, I hope you didn't hear me say sell your cows and buy something else, because that was not the point. It was just to go through the numbers and look at it. Like you said, I'd love to hear from anyone else too. Is there becoming more and more grass-fed up there, Bill? Oh, there, Brian muted. I'll let him talk.
I don't know if I have too much to add. I think Bill's got a good point as far as Wally Olson talks a lot about sell-buy and the cow bell curve. And there's a lot to that. But there's also, if you pick a different route, there's a lot of value to be captured in niche markets. Not everybody has the opportunities. On location and transportation makes a big difference, but kill facilities. But there is still a lot of opportunities in creating value in those other markets, looking at different revenue sources by creating value, whether it's through genetics or finishing animals out. But you always have to keep an eye on what's that realistic cost? What could you have that animal for as a calf or a yearling versus a finished animal? That opportunity cost can really eat you up sometimes. And it gets hard because if you go down the finished beef route, 1 year, you're like, oh, we should have sold all these animals as yearlings, but you can't exactly create a name brand. If you're trying to create a brand for yourself, I got to commit to it. You can't really be like, this year the opportunity cost, we should have sold them as yearlings or calves, but it's pretty hard to create those brands and direct market to consumers that want a certain product a certain way. So that it gets a little tricky sometimes in my mind on the books as far as that opportunity cost and where you should be at, but it's something that you definitely need to keep track of. A lot of guys don't keep track of that and look at, they'll just get stuck in one realm, not realizing they should be selling something else. But the direct to consumer business, you definitely have to commit to it a little bit to make it pay, because there's going to be years where you're up and there's going to be years where you're down, if that makes sense. Hopefully, yeah, so overall, I mean, by creating a brand, you're hoping to be up more than down, like the really good years, like 14, 15 that everybody likes to talk about. You're going to be down a little bit, but everything else, you should be up if you're doing your job right in marketing anyway.
So it's really important for you to understand what are your customer values. If they really want your beef that you raised, then like you said, that gross margin on the weaned calf and the yearling calf, it isn't quite as important as it is to the end run in the business. We have some, just had our economics intensive last week. We had several businesses that were doing some direct to market just like that. And like you said, the production areas were, yeah, break even, not that great, but that enterprise fed the direct market enterprise. So it was important to them to have that feed those two. So you got to look at those two together.
I guess I got a question on your, you're looking at it mostly from a grazing standpoint, but if you've got a hay base that you're producing the feed, and almost backwards, we produce hay and background our calves into a source verified marketing program. Does that shuffle your costs from a direct cost into the overhead costs on your feed?
No, when you're putting up the hay, we're gonna assign a market value, make your cows and your backgrounding calves. They're gonna buy that hay at market value. That way we can get
a split up the three enterprises. Yep. But then should you be pulling gross margin on all three then, shouldn't you?
Correct.
Between the cow calf, the feedlot, and the hay operation?
Yes. Yep. And so the hay operation is gonna have a gross product, and the hay operation gross product will just be yield per acre times market value price. And then your cows will have to buy what they eat. And then your backgrounding and your feedlot will have to buy what they eat too. So what that's going to tell us then is your hay making enterprise paying for its direct costs, or should we just go buy the hay on the open market? And then on the flip side, on your cattle enterprises, it's going to help us determine those margins to keep moving forward with those enterprises.
Then like putting the cows on the cover crops and the where you're intermingling all that. What value, or how do you transfer the value of the soil health into your crop operation?
That's the gray area there. We go.
Everything's integrated in amongst itself to divide it out to make your numbers work, create a mess. But how do you transfer?
That's exactly that? Right. Yep. If you're planting one field full of a cover crop for some winter grazing, what I would do is probably just make the cows pay for those input costs. If you hay the field and we mark down the production and the hay bales off that, and you put the cows out there in the winter, we could probably let the cows donate that. Because like you said, on the soil health part, should the cows be paying for the feed value, or should the cover crops be paying the cows to spread the fertilizer?
Yeah, that's so the thing. Does the crop pull back in the fertilizer that comes out of the feedlot as you spread the manure back out? I mean, to divide it all up like that, kind of, you're losing some in the mix.
Yep. And so, yeah, the cover crops and aftermath grazing, that can get into a gray area. And so that's like the direct marketing. We're going to look at bottom line profit and see if it's all a set of synergistic enterprises that work together and that improves soil health, cattle performance, and all that, then we can let some of that slide. But it can get complicated pretty quickly when you integrate crops and livestock in there together. And I'll put my email up here in our office phone. You guys feel free to call me, email me, whatever you need. So my email is just Jordan at Ranch.
Anybody have one last question?
I've got one. I understand how if the yearlings were roughly half the year, that we could, at least in theory, double their gross product. But is that practical? The grass isn't necessarily going to be yearling quality through the winter, that kind of thing. Can you expound on that, please?
Yeah, you're definitely going to have to look at the grass on your ranch or the resources of the ranch. I was just, and I hope this didn't skew the answer, but I was thinking growing season grass. So then we would have the same quality for the yearlings to the cows. I was just thinking in my mind, we need a weight factor, how many pounds are out there, and then the growing season or the grazing season answer too. So I wasn't thinking about winter quality or poor quality grass, but that would have to be taken account.
Is it possible we could run another class? We say we spend our quality grass, say May through July or something like that, maybe a little earlier, maybe April, but roughly half the year goes to some high gaining yearlings.
Yep.
And then we replace them with something maybe that we could rough through for a portion of the year, or at least buy back at a younger class of animal that is expected to gain. If we were to feed, say we didn't have quality range to feed them, but we could spend our hay dollar would go further on a smaller growing animal through the off season. Is that one way that we could double crop the yearling type situation?
Yes. Yep. I would agree with that. Or go to an open cow or something like that, that can get away on just forage and doesn't necessarily need to gain or grow also. Yeah. I would agree with that.
Thank you, Jordan. We really appreciate you coming on tonight.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And I guess that'll end our the year bull sessions. So thank you guys for
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for having me. Have a Merry Christmas too.